Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Welcome, everyone, to the S3 half-year 2021 trading update. We have a bit to get through, so we'll get onto that as quickly as possible. But I thought it'd be good just to lay out what we'll be doing this morning. As you will have seen from our announcement earlier this morning, very pleased and excited to say that we've announced the appointment of Andrew Beach, who will be our new CFO, who will be taking over from Alex Smith. Big shoes to fill from Alex, who's been our venerable CFO for the last 13 years, a terrific career. And again, I just want to say thank you to Alex for all his support for S3 and his support to me personally in joining S3. We've got a bit of good news to go through on our trading update, and it'd be great for Alex to get there. So we've got to go through the performance update, and then we'll do a summary, and I'm sure we'll take some of your questions. So Alex, over to you for the numbers.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. So in Q2, we saw a strong performance ahead of expectations, driving strong growth both year on year and really importantly versus 2019. And you can see that Q2 net fees were up 8% versus 2019, H1 overall up 3% versus 2019. We upgraded our profit guidance for the year at our unscheduled trading update on the 3rd of June. Q2 net fees were up 22% year on year, and on a working day adjusted basis, up 21%. We had one less working day in Q1, one more in Q2. So overall in the half, working days are flat year on year. So overall group net fees for the half up 10% year on year. Strong performances, particularly strong in DACH, the US and Netherlands. Life sciences and tech are up significantly across the group. Contractor order book, the value of contracts written up to their contractual end date, up 33% year on year at the end of the half. That compares to up 1% at the end of Q1. And on a two-year view, the contractor order book up 13% versus Q2 2019. In terms of the performance by region, DACH, as I mentioned, strong performance. So net fees in the half up 16%, in the quarter up 28%, driven by life sciences and tech, so up 21% and 25% respectively in the half. EMEA, excluding DACH, a strong performance from the Netherlands, up 8%, and that was life sciences and engineering in particular driving that performance. And in the UK, we saw some pleasing productivity gains and moved into positive growth in the second quarter. US has had a very strong performance in the half, up 24% and up 28% in the second quarter. And again, the US driven by life sciences, so clinical operations, a significant work relating to construction in the renewable energy area and mobile applications all continue to be in a particularly high demand. And in the APAC region, good performances from Singapore and from Japan, up 23% year on year in the half. So as we look at the group financially at the end of the first half, you know, significant cash position, 48 million of net cash or 103 million of immediately accessible liquidity, including our revolving credit facility and overdraft facilities. 74% of the group contract, that more resilient business model, geographically and sectorally balanced. So for the top five countries within the group representing 86% of net fees, and a strong mix between technology, 47% of group net fees, life sciences at 24%, and engineering at 20% of net fees. So geographically and sectorally balanced and well positioned as we look into the second half. So I'd like to hand back now to Mark, please.
Thank you, Alex. So the half in summary, look, I think we got really strong improvement in our performance with net fees surpassing the equivalent period in 2019. As you saw, we upgraded our profit expectations in June. We'll work through more of that at our full trading update on the 19th of July. What's pleasing is you've got sustained improvement in our new deal activity and our contractor retention rates as we're going through this period. And on other metrics that are, you know, important to us, as you will have seen in the FT and the publication of the ESG report and ranking on the climate leaders list, you know, S3 is the only recruiter and staffing company in that list, and 69 out of 300. So not only are we, you know, performing well on financial metrics, we're continuing to make good progress in terms of our impact more broadly on society. I think it's also important to recognize where we are in the phases of dealing with this global pandemic. As we shared throughout the time since February 2020, we see this laying out in three phases: the initial response back in that timeframe, this long phase that seems to be going on for some time of ongoing management, and ultimately we'll get into the recovery phase. And where we see ourselves right now is we may be at the tail end, but we're still in this ongoing management as we see, you know, still volatility in the market, vaccine rollouts being very dependent on how we go back to some sort of normal or the next normal, whatever that looks like. And so we are still working to focus on executing regardless of the circumstances. And it's great work by our people, supporting our clients and helping our candidates, that regardless of the circumstances, that's what underpins, you know, our ability to execute in any circumstance and our confidence in the future. So we've got a great H1 under our belt, and, you know, we look forward to the rest of the year, recognizing that there is that continued uncertainty and volatility as we look forward that we need to be mindful of, regardless of our good performance in H1. But with that, why don't we move on to questions?
And we've got a question from Sanjay Vidyarthi at Liberum.
Morning, Mark. Morning, Alex. A couple of questions for me. First one is, I know it's always difficult to gauge, but how materially do you think you've outperformed the market? Because it looks like a very strong performance, but do you have any sense for your level of outperformance? The second question is just in terms of headcount investment in the second half. Again, I know you'll calibrate that depending on how markets kind of evolve, but can you give any kind of sense of the level of headcount investment in the second half?
Thank you, Sanjay. Two good questions. On the level of overperformance relative to the market, I think we're confident that we are, in our core markets at least, broadly outperforming the market. It's very difficult to tell right now. It's really, really early as to what that looks like. And so right now we've got just anecdotal information. There's not much that we can point to. And it will be, I would think, a couple of weeks once we get through the first half that we'll be able to look back and highlight that. And certainly we'll be able to come back and show how we're performing with the market. Because as you know, we're very focused on that. That's the only true measure of are we really going forward. We believe we are, but difficult at this time. I think what we can say is that, you know, that we're very pleased that the businesses are performing well. We've seen good increases in productivity, and, you know, our specialization and focus in the key niches is helping us continue to see that performance moving forward. In terms of headcount, Alex, do you want to have a look at what that looks like through the balance of the year?
Yeah. So as we think forwards, we would expect to see, and we plan to see, a reasonably significant sequential move from where we are now to the end of the year. So quarter three, new grads coming through. We normally see a step up. So we're looking to drive, I would say, a double digit growth sequentially between where we are now and the end of the year, all being well, but subject again to, you know, our fine tuning as we go as appropriate. But a reasonably significant step up in the second half is the intention.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
And we'll go to Andy Grobler at Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Could I ask three questions, please? Firstly, The lack of holidays taken by your candidates, I guess, was supportive through the first half. Can you quantify that to any degree? Secondly, on wage inflation, what are you seeing amongst both your candidates and consultants? And thirdly, You mentioned we're still in this kind of management phase of the pandemic, which I guess is supporting some of that shift to agencies as internal HR departments don't staff up that quickly. How sustainable do you think that shift is going to be once we get into a kind of a more normal, if that's still a relevant word, more normal type of recovery? Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Why don't I do the last one first, and then pass to Alex on the lack of holidays and the wage inflation. It's hard to predict what's going to happen, relative to HR departments moving forward. I would say, however, that the type of talent that we delivered into the market, so we're placing largely at the top end of specialists within specific niches. So these are hard candidates to find at the best of times. And these are, in extreme demand at the moment. And so I would imagine there's going to be a need. We add real value by trying to find those candidates because these are the people that are making a real impact on the programs and projects that our clients have. And so even as you go back to, internal recruitment coming up in many clients, the need for what we do and the types of candidates that we place, we believe is still going to be in demand. Because the supply constraint isn't going away. We think it's going to continue to get more challenging for clients to find those specialist candidates. And so I think it is sustainable into the long term, regardless of the conditions. And that's a function of the value that we add to our clients. In terms of lack of holidays and wage inflation, we've certainly seen that in the pandemic generally. I think there's certainly a pent up demand for it. But Alex, you want to have a crack at how we're thinking about that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, in terms of the holidays, we measure theoretical hours worked and actual hours worked, and there's normally a slight delta as people are taking holidays, not always working their full contracted hours. If you unpack that, comparing H1 2021 to a kind of pre-pandemic level, I would estimate, and this is an estimate, that we have got our contractors working roughly 5% more in terms of hours worked. And so that's the point, which is kind of, and that's 5% more than you would typically get in a pre-pandemic level. So that's kind of benefiting our contract net fees as we think about it at the moment. And that's the potential risk, I guess, looking forwards. In terms of wage inflation, yes, we are seeing wage inflation. And what we would like to do is to talk more about that at the interims. But yes, we are seeing it across perm and contract. And we're seeing good progression too in terms of our contract margins and our perm margins. But again, that will be something we'll talk more about at the interims.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we've got a question from Steve Wolfe at Numis, who asks, is it too early to talk about skills shortages and in what areas leading to an increase in fee rates?
Well, thank you, Steve. Good question. I think as I just, answered with Andy, I think what we tend to choose to operate in supply constrained markets. So one would argue that, one way of defining supply constrained markets is there's a skill shortage. So that's why we operate in those. And the reason that we've got, good, strong fee generation as well as, improving retention rates moving forward as those skills are in demand. And we're certainly seeing that demand is increasing, as you're seeing in our numbers that we posted in H1. And so we think that will continue for some time. And we'll continue to focus on how can we find those specialist niche candidates within technology, within engineering, within life sciences that are going to make an impact for our clients. So certainly that's where our focus is, to make sure that we can keep that fee rate high.
Thank you. And we've got a question from Adrian Kearsey at Panmure Gordon.
Morning, guys. Historically, we've sort of seen traditional contract sort of growing, but ECM models growing much more quickly. Are you continuing to see that acceleration of ECM, and are there any particular geographies that are adopting ECM sort of more quickly or starting to adopt ECM for the first time?
Thanks, Adrian. Great question. I think, you know, broadly across the globe, as we talked about before, you know, employed contractor model is becoming more attractive. In some markets, it's already the norm. So if you think of the US, that is the normal model where we take on, you know, people as our temporary employees, back-to-back contracts with the projects and programs that we have. But we see across Europe, certainly in Germany, the Netherlands, and to some extent in the UK as well, you've got different flavors of the same dynamic going on as you know, governments look to react to this desire for both clients and candidates to work in a more flexible way. And I think where we saw in H1, I think Alex, is 42% increase year over year was
contractor order book for, yes, that's correct. Yeah. So of that 33%, employed contractor was growing at 42%, freelance at 26%. So it's a slightly greater weight of growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's a smaller part, so you've got a bit of the numbers going there. But yes, and we see that to be a broad trend moving forward.
And we'll go to Matthew Lloyd at HSBC.
Hi, guys. A couple of questions. One sort of dull one. Is there anything one-off in Japan? I noticed the growth rate was, the inflection was pretty strong. I wanted to check there wasn't something I was unaware of that might have lifted that. And then secondly, in terms of demand, are you seeing more SME demand and are you still seeing a lot of the vacancies being sort of location agnostic, so an effect of work from home potentially?
Thanks, Matthew. So on Japan, I think it just there's nothing one-off in the numbers there. I think what you're seeing is when it's almost exclusively permanent in Japan for us versus most of our other markets are weighted way towards contracts. So probably just the dynamic of seeing those two numbers together is what sticks out. In terms of the, you know, SME versus enterprise mix, we're not seeing any shift between the two. It's still pretty consistent with how we're weighted in the markets we operate in. So you'll see Germany is more SME weighted, you'll see the Netherlands and the US more enterprise weighted, and that hasn't really shifted. And lastly, I'd say in terms of the work for home component, so there's a bit of that going on, but it's mostly within the markets we operate. So you'll see, that location agnostic piece, you know, culturally more normal in the US and the UK. I think you've still got a bit of, you know, geographic constraint in Germany and continental Europe more broadly. So you've still got to be relatively close. So you're not seeing huge shifts in terms of, you know, people now are working cross-border or doing anything. Certainly on the margins that's happening. I mean, you do have people working in one country that were living in another country before the pandemic and choosing to do that, but that's on the margin. It's not the norm. You know, I think we're seeing, you know, the way in which we operate in the market and the way the markets have historically performed, that's being consistent, although with a kind of pandemic flavor over the top there.
Okay, so it's a national, it's I'll look at a candidate from Birmingham for a job sort of that maybe 2 days a week in London rather than I'll look in India or the Philippines.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. And you'll see, you know, in the US, you'll have people that will be working from Florida that used to be working in the Northeast, for example. But you won't see people in, as you said, the Philippines doing work for somebody in some other market. That's not what we're seeing.
And who can blame them from working from Florida? Anyway, thank you.
And we'll go back to Andy Grobler at Credit Suisse.
Hi, hello again. A couple more from me, if I may. Just on ESG, you mentioned your positioning within the leaders ranking. Is that getting onto client RFPs? So is that making a difference in terms of how you win business apart from the other benefits of that ranking? And then secondly, with Andrew coming in and having experience in in M&A historically. Is that kind of an indicator of where you are thinking or trying to move that strategy forward for the coming years? Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. So on the ESG piece, it's becoming more normal that there's some question. It's not the majority by any stretch of the imagination, but we do expect that we'll get more questions around it moving forward. So I think it will become more important as more companies become sensitive to ESG. And then in terms of Andy coming on, it hasn't changed our strategy at all. You know, our strategy has always been, as we laid out our Capital Markets Day event way back in November 2019, it's always about, you know, growing our market share within those top five core markets. And we've always viewed M&A as a means to an end, not an end in itself. So, you know, if it makes sense, we might do it, but there's a high hurdle rate to get over to get there.
And that's the end of questions. Mark, do you have any closing remarks?
So, well, thank you, everyone. You know, we've got a strong H1 under our belt, which is always good to see in a year. We're still, just to remind everyone, you know, a volatile environment, as we've seen from the UK government news this morning about, you know, the easing of lockdown. And so we've got to navigate through that. We're confident that the way in terms of we're operating and focusing on execution, regardless of the environment, that we'll be able to do that, but there will be the knock-on impacts of, you know, the macro economic environment that we operate in as we look to H2. So still volatility, but we're certainly confident that we can manage through that. And you know, exciting that we've as planned, we've got our new CFO joining us, and we'll see you all again, excitingly, on July 19th. For our interim results presentation. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.